Hello and welcome to the Liquor Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Timo Obisdeli, and we are back to review all of the action from what we're going to call the first part of the 2024 Formula 3 season. And my, do we have a lot of ground to cover, so I'm glad we kind of stuck now as part one. Joining me to do this, though, is, of course, Mr. Jesse Billington. There we go. Mr. Jesse Billington. We're going to keep that in the cut. There we go. How are
Mr.
you?
Mr. Jelly Billington. Is that how we're referring to you? That's getting kind
it's of... It's a Monday night. I was up at 1 a.m. watching the Indy 500. You asked why I didn't stay up to watch the NASCAR. That is why. I don't know what your name would have been otherwise. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. A little bit sunburnt. I spent most of the day digging a patio for my sister's new cottage. So, yeah, quite sunburnt, quite tired, but ready to talk F3. I've been infused by it so far this season and finally glad to have a chance to discuss it.
And as it's Formula 3, we thought who better to come and join us for this than friend of the podcast and inside F2 host, Fraser Ford. How are you doing?
All good, thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. My voice is suffering a little bit. I'll be honest, I was at the playoff final yesterday with Southampton versus Leeds. A good win for the Saints. I shouted a bit too much, but I'm all good and ready to talk about all things Formula 3, absolutely.
I feel like for the sake of my girlfriend, though, to report a little bit about Leeds, but I know so little about football, I really can't.
I was questioning who the Saints were, so we won't go into that. So we're going to keep it with you, though. Initial thoughts on the season so far, not Charlotte Forest. What have you made of it?
I think it's been a really good season. I think there's been awful lots going on in the races, isn't there? We've had some entertaining races so far, none least, obviously, Monaco this weekend. It was absolute carnage. That's what we love to see. But there's been a few drivers who have really stood out. I think Luke Browning's had a great start to the season. The Prema drivers, obviously, always up there and competitive. And Trident have impressed me as well. So, it's been a really strong start to the season. It's just classic Formula 3, really, isn't it? It's drama everywhere you look. It's never a dull race. So,
no, very much so. 8 different race winners and 8 races, Jesse. What have you made of it?
It has been an absolute bonanza, really. And I've loved it. I have to say, it's been a good sort of start to the season. I think some of the new talent we've had come in have really been sort of showing the ropes a bit to some of the sort of, I won't say old hands at Formula 3, they're all basically children, so there's not really an old hand to it, but yeah, they've been showing their sort of their talent early and giving us a good show. So I think as the season goes by, it's going to be interesting to see who's got sort of the endurance to make it all the way through and whose eyes start to wander and look at other options possibly.
I mean, if we dial the clock back all the way to Bahrain, just have a little look at each round as it's been there, Fraser, you're saying about how it's classic Formula 3. It really was, and we saw that straight away in qualifying. I mean, 21 out of the 30 drivers within a second of one another for that. That's the first one of the year. They're just getting warmed up. It's ridiculous. And I mean, Buganovic on pole, you're kind of not too surprised at that, but it's nice to see him get that because it's his second season now, and that doesn't happen too often with Formula 3 because you see so many people to immediately go somewhere else, even if it's not Formula 2. Van Hopen on reverse pole, nice to see that. It's again one of these names that you hear about a little bit from dancing around in the Formula Regional Championships, but because there's only so much time in the day, you don't get to watch everything. But like, I know this name for some reason, and then, oh, reverse pole, interesting. And then you saying, Jesse, about children being, well, yeah, because Arvid Lindblad, he took first blood in the first race, 16 years old. Madness, isn't it? I mean, yeah, I mean, just talk about that sprint race for a second, because 5 cars battling for the lead at various points, which we wish we had that in F1. And Van Hopen getting into P2, Fornaroli P3 in the end. And yeah, I mean, P6 is a perfect example of battling all the way throughout the grid. 0.004 of the second between Esterson and Mini, which if you're Gabriel Mini, you're thinking, who the hell is this driver here? Because you're not expecting it to be Esterson, quite frankly, are you?
No, he really comes out of the blue, sort of kicking and screaming into the sprint race and proving that, yeah, it was a great move for him because he's moved up from, was he Fracker up to F3 this year, I think, was Esterson, wasn't he? So, yeah, it's GB3 even, yeah. So, again, it's the drivers that are making these moves and sort of drawing blood early. It's really nice to see them get their elbows out into the series and sort of proving why they've had that move up. I think that's what we often see with the feeder series is drivers that have to prove why they got that move up. And I know at the start of the year, Timo and I were questioning quite a few of them in F3 and F2 going, who's this fella? Where's he come from? And why has he got the pick over someone else? But a lot of them, certainly in F3.
That's why I don't go back and listen to our previews for F3 every year. I'm thinking this is going to be butchery by the end of the year. I know it.
Yeah.
I still feel bad for Gushmeini after ripping into him at the start of last season, but never mind. There was also, again, F3 being suitably F3, just looking at Bahrain for the race itself, six different drivers on the podium for both races. I mean, that's not too bad either going for them. I mean, Luke Browning, you were saying they impressed you for Asia, commanding win despite car troubles there. And Mansell, again, he's returning. P2, it's nice to see him up there. And Tramnitz, a name that we don't really know too much about at that point of the year, starting what's going to be a fairly decent run so far for him in Formula 3. And again, just some very nice stuff going on there. I mean, that feature race, it kind of just, as obvious as it sounds, an extension of the sprint race and with all the chaos and all the action to go with it.
Yeah, I think Bahrain was particularly interesting for me because, as you say, you always see a lot of turnover, driver turnover in Formula 3, and there's not many drivers who stick around for a second season. And I think it was, I was expecting the drivers in their second years, the likes of Boganovic, Fornaroli, to really, do well and to kick off the season really strong, and then the rookies maybe to come back at them a little bit as the season goes on. And obviously we saw Boganovic obviously taking pole, Browning getting a win in the feature race, and it was and Mansell in P2 as well, obviously. So it was quite much that. But then you had the mix, as you say, of Arvid Lindblad's up there, Lawrence Van Hoopen's up there, who's, for me, really impressed this year. Lawrence Van Hoopen's every single race so far, he has been, in with a shout of a podium in every single race so far, which has been really impressive for a rookie who didn't, wasn't one of the standout drivers in Freca last year. So, as the rounds, go on, I'm very interested to see how the rookies do compare and close up to the veterans, if you like, the veteran, the 18-year-old veterans.
These old people sticking around taking
exactly that, exactly. Yeah, but no, it was exactly what I kind of imagined it to be like, that experience paid off in Bahrain. And obviously, as you saw, Boganovic, obviously not the race he would have wanted, but Browning, Mansell, those familiar names that we've become used to, really taking advantage of their experience, really.
Mm. And again, you kind of see teasers, Jesse, for what we now know as a pattern later on in the season. I mean, Fornaroli in P7, kind of again in the points, Lindblad P8 with the fastest lap, both having a really good recovery drive because he qualified pretty badly in that first round. But again, he made it through, and these are names we're seeing more and more often now. I mean, you even just look ahead to the next round in Australia, for example, Fornaroli taking pole there. And again, it's like, ooh, yes, this is a name we know, and we're getting more familiar with it this time around, and it's that consistency bringing back, like you say, for the few drivers that we get back for a second season. It hasn't always got a plan. You might think, who was it you were interviewing a little while ago? I'm trying to think. It was one of the PHM drivers last year, I think. You talked about them making the jump straight from wherever they go into F2, because you think, well, why not just take that shot if you can raise the funds for it? Because you can't get, you see all the time in F3, there's drivers there that might not do too well, but in F2 they absolutely soar, and you think, why not take that chance? So it's nice to see that some of these drivers that do come back for a second season in F3, they're not regretting it so far.
100%. And, we spoke to, on Inside F2, we spoke to Josh Dirksen pre-season, who obviously jumped from Freca up to Formula 2. And also, obviously, Josh Mason did a similar kind of thing last year where he
skipped. I think that was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, he skipped Formula 3, went straight to Formula 2, and obviously Antonelli's the high-profile name that's done it as well. So there are more and more drivers who are skipping Formula 3, and the common answer we seem to be getting from those drivers is that, F3 is so much of a lottery that sometimes it's not quite about skill. I mean, you look at the Spa feature race last year in Formula 3. It was an absolute lottery. You didn't know who was going to win that race, and you can't really... And there's times in the season, I think that's fair to say, there's times in the season where it's maybe not about skill and a little bit more about luck, which is why you're seeing some drivers skip Formula 3. But for those drivers who are returning, they've had an opportunity this year to really show what they're about. And obviously Australia, I'm assuming we're moving on to that now. Fornaroli sticking it on pole. You know, that was that's a great step for him to show, you know, had that experience last year of being in and around up the sharp end of the grid. A few of those drivers have moved on and he's, you know, boom, along comes the opportunity. Bahrain was a fair start, I think that's fair to say. And then he sticks it on pole in Melbourne. So, yeah, I think, it's interesting, isn't it? The different perspectives we get.
I think what you're saying there about the lottery aspect really comes into play slightly here. We notice it a little bit more, again, as a pattern for later, because you see Solov during qualifying there bunting the MP car off, and that was just, you think, how the hell was that only a three-place grid penalty? And then you look ahead to Monaco, and he gets reverse polled, and he goes on to win the race there. And you think, surely that would have just been whoever would have possibly been in P12 would have got that win. But again, it's from the three. So you're like, how much is the lottery? How much of it is not? But then if we just look at the sprint race, Stenshorn, brilliant first win. He kind of gets a bit of a gap out towards the end. And then you look at the rest of his results so far this season, go, where the hell did that come from? He's kind of just been, that was definitely easily the high point, but where's, you'd hope for maybe a few other bits of his here and there, but it's all just like, he's gone way up and then just kept going back down again. And we're like, I mean, that is Formula 3, but it is very much that lottery aspect, like you're saying there. But Jesse, that consistency again from other drivers, looking at Lindblad and Van Hopen there again.
Yeah, the consistency is something I'll get onto. We sort of got our winners and spinners, or winners and drivers we're sort of looking forward to a bit more from as the season goes on later. Consistency really is key when it comes to these feeder series. And Lindblad, Van Hopen kicking off early with the consistency, getting it into the points, getting it up to the podium has been a really impressive drive. And we'll sort of talk about it a bit more as it goes on, but I've been sort of tracking the data as we go along. I look at the big sort of graph and the spreadsheet, the spread of points going through, and the formation of the grid hasn't really shaken itself out yet. Usually, even by this weekend, sort of F3 Monaco, I'm looking at the data now and it's not shaken itself out to have give us a sort of a clear front runner. We've got a clear front running pack of four drivers, but there's a group behind them of just about as many drivers. I think something like the sort of top eight or so drivers are split, but by just 40 points between them. It's close and it's exciting. And that's something that sort of you can track back all the way through to the beginning. You look at where the points were in Australia and there was not a lot between them at the top. You've got sort of Browning and Fornaroli locked on points coming out of Australia. Mini close behind, Meganovic not too far off it either. Lindblad, Tremitz, Mansell, Van Hopen and Boyer all within a sort of spitting distance of one another coming out of Australia. It's, yeah, you've got to be consistent to really start drawing ahead at this, even at sort of this point in the season. But in Australia, by then, you want to be nailing out your consistency.
And as we've seen last year, I think it was when they were first there, Formula 3 is just chaos in Melbourne. I mean, Formula 3 is chaos at the best of times anyway, but it is just somehow more chaos. And I mean, a note I wrote at the time, looked back when I was going through this document and then checking back again, I was like, oh no, I definitely still agree with myself. The first 10 laps, I might be stretching memory a little bit here, but the first 10 laps of that sprint race were they not some of the craziest and best you've seen in Formula 3 just period?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. You know, in the UK, it was completely, middle of the night for us.
That wakes you up, though.
Formula 3, yeah. And, you know, well worth staying up for, well worth ruining my sleep schedule for, because it was just carnage, wasn't it? It was chaos everywhere you look. So, but we've become so accustomed to that with Formula 3, haven't we? And Melbourne, I like the fact that Formula 2, Formula 3 are at Melbourne. I think it's a great track. And I think with the amendments, it's become an even better track and an even more chaotic track. And, you stick Formula 3 cars going around Melbourne. What else would we expect, really, you know? It was another good weekend, wasn't it? Again, another good round of action. I was really glad for Dino Beganovic, who I don't think has had... I think it's fair to say he hasn't had the best of luck in his time in Formula 3. Points last season.
I was just thinking, is it fair to say he's kind of the Lando Norris of Formula 3 in terms of we thought he'd win a lot sooner?
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't believe when he hadn't won last season. He hadn't won a race last season. I couldn't believe it. So, obviously, a very quick driver who, for me, will graduate to Formula 2 next season. I think regardless of how he does this season, he'll be aiming for the title, of course. And I think he's well within a shot of winning the title, as you say. He's 14 points off the... I mean, 14 points in the grand scheme of things did nothing in Formula 3, is it? So, well within a shot. But you know, looking back at Melbourne, hopefully Melbourne is the start for him to really kick off and to boost his confidence for the rest of the season.
And again, the consistency that I was saying about before, I keep bringing this consistency back to you, Jesse, but Fauna only finishing P2 in that feature race, Mini in P3 after a very nice overtake on Browning towards the end, who then finished a P4. Again, all these drivers you're seeing near the top, all just kind of consistently there, and even more impressive in some respects, considering the chaos that we see. I mean, you look at drivers further down the pack, like Loke in the sprint race, you somehow get up 14 places, and then you've got these other guys who are just like, it's just a whole station, we're in good places right now, let's not mess this up for ourselves. We need to get points on the board, and they very much know that this isn't a championship where you need to win all the time, and you can do that. That's a very nice option, and if you can do that, by all means, go for it, but you just need to get those points in the bag. And it's not that I didn't enjoy Imola or Bahrain or Monaco even for Formula 3, but I think, for me at least, feel free to disagree with me, Jesse, but I think Australia treated us a bit too soon to possibly the best action we've had so far this season.
Australia definitely gave us a good outing when it came to the F3. I remember sort of watching it all back each morning because I was working a sort of live event at the time, so I wasn't able to stay up and sort of completely ruin my sleep schedule, but sort of watching it back and sort of going, oh, that's a lot of really good racing action and a lot of good driving talent on display. And like you said, the consistency, the drivers that know that this early in the season, you are at risk of essentially throwing away a run for the championship with one wrong move. So they're playing it a bit more careful, but they're still playing because they know there's a lot to play for. And it's nice to see young drivers being able to find that balance and teams being able to coach them through that balance, which is what we want to see from feeder series, from Formula 3, is that proper driver development, that not necessarily how quickly you can turn a wheel on track, but how well you can build a championship and how well you can build a season. That's what also makes a good driver.
Mentioning consistency, and but rightly so, because I mean, you look at the drivers who have won the championship, they haven't won a lot. I mean, Bortoleto only won 2 races last year. But Martins didn't win many races when he won his championship. And even if you go back to, was it 2020 when Oscar Piastri won the championship? Didn't win many races either. So consistency absolutely is the recipe to success. And as long as these drivers can regularly be scoring points, maybe podiums every couple of rounds, then they'll be well in with a shot of winning the title come the end of the season. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing we said about Bortoleto. He won 2 feature races last year. Then you look at O'Sullivan, won 4 races across the board. Even Marty down in 5th won 3 races. But because Bortoleto just had that consistency across the season, bar 3 occurrences, he was scoring points at every weekend. That's what you need to just slowly keep building that lead.
He didn't win since April. It was April his last win, and he still won the championship.
And Albert Park at the feature race, and then just sort of kept sticking it in the points bar. A rough weekend at Spa, he was properly just on it. I think it was Spa that allowed everyone to close up to him and sort of opened up the fight a bit more. But
I do remember last year looking at the standings and going, "That was Bortoleto. I feel like I've not seen him at all. I don't know who that is. Actually, I don't have a face for him. What is this?" And then it was like, how the hell has he managed to do that? But just a last thing on Australia there is that as well, Buchanan gets that win under his belt finally. And like you were saying earlier, Fraser, you've got such a high turnover with drivers. I mean, there's probably a level of satisfaction with just overtaking anyone because you're just happy to get past. But is there more satisfaction with him that he's getting past someone like Fornaroli? And then it's, while there's always this kind of this, unfortunately, this aerial dogfight happening all around, and it's at that point where there's still enough craziness about there. And then the second half, you kind of have this, can I do this? I've been in this position a couple of times and it's not worked out. Is this finally the one that works? And I've managed to get past an experienced as much as we can be at this point. There's still, like you were saying, just children to get this win. Do you think that would really help the confidence boost for him, that he kind of needed that at that point in the season to go, right, regardless of whatever else happens now, I know that upward trajectory can come and I am capable of doing this? Because you've got to think, he last year, so much talk around him and it didn't really materialise. And we've had this discussion about Antonelli recently with how much does that get to the driver and how what way do you view them and how much does that kind of impact teams then looking at them as where all that goes. And this is probably a nice thing for him to go, screw whatever else is, I know I'm good enough to do this.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it was a great move, wasn't it? It was an outstanding move by Bakanovic. But for me, it's not only, you know, a great time in terms of the season to make that move and get that win, but also in his career. You know, you're looking at a driver who hasn't, as we said, high expectations, driving a Prema in Formula 3 in 2023, didn't win a race all season long. And I think the longer that goes on for, the more he will start to doubt himself. So to get that win early doors in the championship, in the championship is really good because it means he can start believing in himself again. I'm sure he never lost belief, but, you know, you have that evidence that you are good enough and you can win races. And then you can start to build a championship campaign from there. But, you know, in terms of his career, if he had gone three, four rounds into 2024 and he hadn't won a race, I think that causes serious self-doubt. I really, really do, regardless of whether it's luck or not. So obviously we know how good a driver Dino Bakanovic is. So I was really glad for him that he won that weekend in Melbourne. It was a great drive. It was a really, really good drive. We saw a glimpse of how quick he was, obviously over one lap in Bahrain as well. For me, he's got to be someone we look out for the rest of the season. I think he's got a real genuine shot at winning the title this year.
That weird silver lining we can take from either Prema and F2 winning a race to get that, you can go, well, I've done it, so it's all good.
Exactly that. Backmarkers, Prema and F2 are the only step on the Formula
2. It's mad that I'm still getting my head around that one after I heard that. The death, like, you know. But they're a podcast that know what they're talking about. That can't be right. Oh, never mind. Imola, we got a little bit of information there, Jesse, which is potentially going to have it's going to have consequences down the line, but we're not quite sure what those consequences will look like just yet.
Well, yeah, this was a sort of bit that I stumbled across. Was we found out that several drivers are being sort of preemptively disqualified from certain races for running in other series. And I sort of said at the time, we were talking about, was it Stenshorn, Solov, the fact that they've been sort of denied entry into, off the top of my head, it's Silverstone and Spa. I can't remember which way round it goes for the two of them. And of course, there was a penalty for Arvid Lindblad as well for GB3 testing. But I've done some digging to look at other drivers that are running in similar series. We were panicked a bit about Dorian Pain, who's doing F1 Academy of Freca. Abby Pulling, who's doing GB4, I think I'm correct in saying, an F1 Academy at the same time. And then I sort of stumbled across Emily de Hooch as well, who's doing Eurocar Cup 3 alongside F1 Academy. But I haven't heard any issues on that side. So maybe she's asked about it, got permission. And equally, Zandvoort is the only clash on the calendars for F1 Academy and EC3. So assuming that she's sort of said, I won't run in one if I'm allowed to run in t'other, she might have sort of found the workaround. But yeah, it's just sort of one of those things you don't expect to crop up or rear its head, and then sort of all of a sudden it throws this extra dimension into the F3 season.
It very much came across as Ted's found something in his notebook from 10 years ago and it's suddenly become relevant. You're like, is this still a thing? Oh, apparently. Damn, we have to actually look at this now.
So from my understanding, Jesse, it's the word permission, as you say, that's the key word there, right? So Stenshorn and Solov didn't get permission from the FIA to race in those series that they went to race in. Obviously, Stenshorn went to race in GB3 at Silverstone, and has been banned for that race in Silverstone. And I think what they're saying is that gives you an unfair advantage when it comes to racing in those races. And Stenshorn, obviously a rookie, there's plenty of other rookies on the grid. And for me, I think it's fair in terms of if you had every rookie in Formula 3 going to race in GB3 and Freca and all of those circuits that they hadn't raced in before just to gain experience, I don't know if that sits right with me, to be fair. So I think, a good idea from High Tech to send Sean to GB3 and for ART to do the same with Solov. At this level, to be doing that and making a mistake like that and not checking, you'd expect better from those teams, really, wouldn't you?
I think especially as there was one driver, which one was it, Jesse, that had sought permission and was granted as a result, which kind of very much played into the hands of that. Like, you've got to at least ask us.
Think
you can sneak it past us, we will notice.
Yeah, previous iterations or previous instances of this being reared had worked because the driver had asked. And equally, I think it's also depends on what class you want to go and race in and the sort of similarity between the main class you're racing in that year. If you're racing in a very different series, it's not seen as giving you an unfair advantage. And I think that's possibly where Pan is getting away with Frecker, is because one is seen as an F4 spec car, one is seen as an F3 spec car. There is a significant difference that it's not going to be directly translatable. Yes, you'll learn the circuit, but you could do that on a sim. Knowing how a car feels is going to be vastly different, in the same way that, yes, I've driven around the Nürburgring in a sort of Toyota Hilux. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be any good there if you stick me in like a hypercar or something to do 24 hours of Nürburgring. So the argument between sort of knowing circuit, but knowing specific series car feel to a circuit is going to be sort of markedly different. I think that's where the permission comes in, as well as the weird, I think they do it by power to weight ratio is currently the way they sort of mark it out. So it'll be interesting to see if it rears its head again later this season as we get to other circuits or potentially other bits are uncovered. But yeah, it's I just stumbled across the Emily de Hooch bit while I was sort of writing up on this one, sort of going into it, just trying to find another fact to add to this one. But de Hooch seems to have done things properly and has been given the green light.
And the same with, obviously, Abbey Pullin racing in British F4 and Dorian Pan as well racing in Frecker. It seems like they've gone around things the right way. And for me, if they go around it the right way, then, you know, for a lot of those girls in F1 Academy even, the more time they get on track, the better, you know. Yeah. So, more than happy with that. I think it's just making sure that you go around things the right way. But what made me laugh about the Stenshorn thing was that Stenshorn was announced as a McLaren driver that weekend, and then also was then being banned from racing at Silverstone in Formula 3 later on in the season, which was
it was perfect for headlines, though, because you get to say McLaren driver banned from Silverstone or something. Yeah. And you think, oh no, what?
Arguably it's worse for Solov, though, because he didn't actually get to make a competitive run in Euro Cup 3 because at Spa it was all rained off. So he went along to
learn your lesson, then ask permission
to see bits of the qualifying, and then never actually got to race in sort of like a timed series, and still got hit with the ban. You're like, oh, that's almost worse.
Absolute waste of time for Solov.
Properly gutting there. So Imola qualifying, Timo.
Yeah, we got. I mean, you were saying earlier, Fraser, tried and impressed you. I'm thinking this is probably the main bit of impression that they made on you there. Pretty, like a whole lockout, not just one, two, three lockouts with Ramos on pole. Yeah. I mean, I know it didn't go that way for the feature, but the fact that they've got them, they still got two of the three drivers on the podium, not too bad. We'll talk about the feature race in a second because, I mean, we thought the feature race, the sprint race in Monaco was messy, but the one in Imola wasn't exactly great either. And if this is the trend we're getting for the European sprint races in Formula 3, we're in for a hell of an expensive time over the next few months. And, five safety cars, an FBSC. Then all of this kind of mind-numbingness with the podium afterwards, which I will try and explain correctly in a second, but I think the whole race was summed up perfectly on commentary by Alex Brundle, who we need to start making a book for with just his quotes from commentary, I think, because he summed this up with lots of punctuation, not a lot of sentences in this one. And I don't know where he gets them from, but that was just an excellent piece of commentary.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well summarized.
Yeah. I mean, I do like sitting down having a good chat with Brundle because he is an absolute laugh to chat with. And he has a great ability to call these feeder series races and understand exactly what's going on, even when all hell is lost, like the sprint race in Imola, and you sort of try to piece it together as everything comes across the line. And then afterwards, all hell breaks loose once again, which is very strange.
Yeah, I mean, you forgive it slightly because it's Formula 3, but it's still a pain in the ass because, I mean, you've got Nolli on there. You feel sorry for the drivers, really, out of all of it. Never mind the fans who are just trying to go, am I meant to enjoy this race or not? I don't know if I'm allowed to enjoy this next. He leads from that one, then loses it four corners from the end, but Groth absolutely blitzes him with a perfect launch after the virtual safety car. Then he gets a 5-second penalty, so Leon gets the win back. Then that gets removed, so Groth does get the win, but then Tremnes, somehow he had a 5-second penalty, which didn't actually impact him at all, but he then gets that taken away from him too. So he's in P2 and going, how the hell did I get here? And Leon's in P3 thinking, what just happened here? And we're all just there, we're with you, mate. We don't know what's going on quite either here. And I think initially, Fraser, I thought, oh, good. They've managed to get this thing down where you penalise the driver just before the podium. Job done. Happy days. Which couldn't happen, could it?
Absolutely not. I mean, we're kind of accustomed to Formula 3 results being decided after the race is finished, aren't we? But I don't know whether that's a good thing or not. I don't think it is a good thing, to be honest.
I'm not happy with it.
Yeah, but, you know, it was a weird situation in that I don't think anyone on the podium was particularly happy. You had Noel Leon, who didn't know whether he hadn't won the race on track, so he wasn't very happy. And obviously the two guys behind him had both picked up 5 second penalties. And I think, yeah, Ollie Gerfer, you know, you could tell that he wasn't very happy. You could tell that he wasn't very happy as well. So you're in a weird situation where three Formula 3 drivers have just got on the podium and none of them are happy. So, it's a bit of a... bit of an odd one. Leon, I thought he had a really good race, actually. And, the fact that he's stepped up and he's had a really good start to the season, he's a standout driver for me, definitely. And I hope that Imola was a bit of a standout or a bit of a race where that kicks him off for the rest of the season, because I think it was really impressive in the Imola sprint. The feature race didn't go quite so well, but the sprint race, definitely a good race for him.
No, but even if the feature race didn't go to plan for him, it was nice to see these other drivers that, like we were saying earlier, consistency, but with a bit of freshness in there, because you've got these consistent drivers like Gerfer, Lee Browning, Boganovic, Mini, but it's Megatuniv somehow out of nowhere. Not relatively out of nowhere, but kind of out of nowhere when you look at all these other drivers going, P1, I'll have that. Excellent. And it's just nice to see, again, this other race winner, and you think, how long is this going to go on for? Not knowing we're about to be treated to another two new race winners in Monaco, but it's just, this is what Formula 3 is about, anyway, because you say about it being a lottery earlier, but this doesn't feel like that. This felt like he put in the work and he made it convert from qualifying to the race and just went, if this is my only shot, I'm going to take it and I'm going to make it count. And it's exactly what he did.
100%. Fair play to him.
Megatuniv is one that I'm sort of interested in. I'm curious as to sort of where he's come from. Has been a relatively sort of lackluster career to this point. Not a great deal to say for him in things like sort of French and Italian F4, bit of running in sort of regional Asian and a bit of Freca, and then just sort of pops up into F3 and isn't doing too badly, all things considered. And then that win comes out, really sort of solidifies and makes everyone sort of sit up and go, oh, hang on. And because he's at the front, you see a bit of his racecraft, you see his ability through the field, you're sort of going, oh, that's interesting. I like a bit of that.
I think we like that, especially from drivers from parts of the world that we don't see represented all that often. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, he's Peruvian, isn't he?
Megatuniv, I think, is he French, I thought.
He's French. Who is
that? Yeah, Megatuniv is French. You're the Peruvian you're thinking of.
Who am I thinking of?
He's Zagazeta? Yeah.
Oh, never mind then. My point does not make any merit whatsoever. We can cut this out. But it's still nice to see a new race winner anyway. So I enjoyed that aspect.
Ramos and Leon, for sort of the Mexican contingency, are sort of doing quite well.
Yeah.
Solov as well, Bulgaria, quite an underrepresented nation when it comes to the world of motorsport, apart from sort of, I'm going to assume, rallying. So again, nice to see that change being made.
I don't know if I'm jumping slightly, but it was nice to hear the Bulgarian national anthem on the podium in Monaco, right?
I was going to say, as anyone who knows you, Fraser, you just like nothing better than just to sit back and relax, listen to a bit of the Bulgarian national anthem in the evening. Okay. So it's nice that this could be finally something we all revel in together.
You know me too well, Timo. You know me too well.
It does lead us nicely into the Monaco weekend, though, for F3.
Yeah, Solov on reverse pole and pretty much just commanded the win. He took it and just, like you say, became the first Bulgarian to somehow ever win in Formula 3. It's this weird thing of, you think surely there was one before, but then again you think, well, name me the Bulgarian driver, and you think, okay, fair enough, mate. I can't, because there isn't one. But yeah, it's interesting, because you look at a driver like him with the results he's had this season, and even in the feature races, and you think, and you look at last year with his driving, and you think, but it's nice that when you get the opportunity, he doesn't throw that away, and he's able to do something with it, and he kind of goes against type in a way. It's a shame he reverted back to what we're kind of more expecting from him in the feature race, but it's nice that he was able to do that. And again, Kramnitz in that consistency, Van Hopen there in that consistency, but like in Imola, we saw absolute carnage at the start, because we saw, what was it, about a third of the field eliminated in what's got to be one of the kind of as amusing as a crash can be. The drivers are all fine, so you can say this now, but it just was like, there is other bits of road. Just because the first two crashed doesn't mean you all have to drive into each other consistently. And it's like, it's the neatest crash I've ever seen.
Yeah, very, very strange one. And then, of course, we got two cars locked together as well at the top of the hill, which was quite funny watching them sort of trying to be pulled apart. You're sort of looking at it going, oh, so that's how they make F4 cars. But yeah, it's... just a very strange sort of moment, but also sort of very typical of what you expect on a tight, demanding street circuit when you throw 30 cars at it and just go, have at it, boys. And there is a huge pileup. Quick, go back to the Bulgarian racing drivers thing. According to Wikipedia, 8 of them, one of which is, of course, Nikola Solov. So not a great list. And most of the ones I've clicked off have been rally drivers. So, yeah.
I'll tell you now, Fraser, though, if we do another pub quiz in the future, look at who the other 7 are, because you can bet your bottom dollar he's going to put a question on where he's going to get you to name some of them.
Yeah, feeder series round. It will be name me a Peruvian and a Bulgarian racing driver. So, yeah, if you heard it here first, if you're coming along to our Christmas quiz, I'll know if you paid attention to this episode.
I'm just going to make a note of that now, and I'll have that ready for you for the quiz in December. Absolutely.
Write that down and get
great way to impress everyone else in the room as well and get yourself some branding points with that.
100%. That's a very rogue brag, isn't it? I can name every Bulgarian driver to want a race.
If that's not opening line at a bar, I'm not interested.
Yeah. You know what, though, going back to the Monaco race, though, I mean, that incident, for me, the thing that I found most entertaining about that clip was all of the drivers kind of debriefing by the side of the track. You had a collection of Formula 3 drivers, fresh-faced Formula 3 drivers.
You never see that many of them together during a race, do you?
Exactly that. But I thought there was going to be maybe a little bit of animosity, a little bit of, what are you doing? None of that. Absolutely none of that. They all look like they're having a real civilized debrief. And what I love about feeder series at the moment is that they all seem to get on. They're having a great time. They're grateful for the fact that they're in, on the Formula One race weekend. And I thought it was quite entertaining watching them having a little chat and having a little laugh about what had happened. So, very interesting.
You were expecting there to be a bit of a sort of NASCAR all-star race fight in the paddock, really, with the F3 drivers all stood at the side of the track.
100%. I saw that. Was that last weekend, a couple of weekends ago?
Yeah, a couple of weekends ago. Yeah, North Wilkesboro.
That was my hope. Reality, not so much. So
they're a lot more refined in F3, we'd argue. A little more.
It's more the old football and rugby argument, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah, it's NASCAR and Formula 3.
Sport for hooligans, exactly. Played by gentlemen, and vice versa.
No, of course we don't want that, really. But it was entertaining that they were having a chat about it with a smile on their face. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to say, by comparison, the feature was not as chaotic, but it definitely had elements of, oh dear, not again, quite consistently. And you got that straight away with Wirtz spinning out of the race on lap one. But then you had Lokes, it's an interesting driver. He's kind of, I feel like, I'm not sure where he's in the championship at the moment, but he's this driver that the name pops up more often than you'd think, and it's for interesting reasons. And on a driver like Mary Boyer, who he's decent, and he just makes this absolutely sublime overtake on Boyer on lap 7. And you're kind of annoyed that Boyer gets back past him later on, because you think that was just really nice. It's Monaco. It's going to be tough. And you've somehow managed to get past this driver that's more experienced than you. And just fair play to you. And it's this kind of thing of Formula 3, you're obviously proving yourself to try and get up further up the ladder. You're there. You're trying to make it as less of a lottery as you can. And if you can prove yourself at a circuit like Monaco, that's going to go a long way. Where instead of you having maybe a consistent run in non-points places in other tracks, but it's consistent. So you go, look, I'm getting nearer. I'm improving. But if you overtake someone on camera, on TV at Monaco, you think, I can stick that in the PowerPoint presentation for the sponsors. They're going to love that one. And I think, This is why we did this year, Jesse, for the format for the feed series, of taking a bit of time with them to see which drivers further down the order are worth looking at a little bit more. And he's definitely one of them, I think.
Yeah, he sort of stands 18th at the moment with 8 points, but he banked all of his 8 points this weekend at Monaco, 6 in the sprint, 2 in the feature. So he's sort of come to terms with his car a bit more and had a bit of a better run of things. I mean, he's not been terrible to this point. I can probably pull up average qualifying for him, 19.8. So he's in the top 20 every time we're going qualifying. And generally speaking, he's coming about 15th in sprints on average and struggling a bit more in features, 18th. But I mean, he's making it work. And certainly when you look at sort of qualifying in 20th, finishing 18th, he's making up places if you sort of ignore retirements ahead of him. And certainly when it comes to sprints, he's really sort of putting the pressure on in the races where it's even shorter and he's somehow making the moves count.
That's really nice to see.
So it was a good weekend for Joseph Loke, wasn't it? It's by far his best weekend in Formula 3. And I think we're talking about a driver with, he's a very good driver for me. He pushed Callum Boysen all the way in GB3 last year, led that championship for a long time last season before Callum Boysen nicked it at the back end of the season, obviously up against Alex Dunn as well. But, you know, I think we can expect more from Joseph Lowe as the season goes on. I think as he gets more comfortable with the car, we start visiting a few tracks that he's more familiar with. I think, you know, Joseph Lowe could be one to watch. And, you know, he's in a Rodin. Rodin don't necessarily have the best reputation in Formula 3. I think this season probably all about setting himself up for a more competitive drive next season in Formula 3. So, yeah, no, definitely a good weekend for Joseph Lowe.
On the other side of that, however, consistency of a name turning up was not what we kind of, and I'm sorry for doing this, is not what we hoped for from Van Hopen, because he crashed out before the swimming pool on the race restart. And interesting, though, his first DNF of the season, which just shows how well he's been doing up to this point. It's a shame because it just kind of, I think he just took himself out in a weird way. It kind of, he got a bit too close and just too close to everything in front of him, including the wall, and the wall just said, "I'm Monaco, you don't get to do that to me and survive the race, you crash." So it's very unfortunate there, but at least you're not, who was it? Was it Leon or Megatuniv that was just kind of, I think it was Megatuniv that got caught up in the Solov incident up at Mirabeau and was just trying to avoid the incident, and then I think Solov or Leon reversed into him on their way out of it, and he was kind of done, you think, oh, this poor man. He's just trying to not drive into you, and he's been hulked this weekend.
Yeah, he got the Hülkenberg treatment that Hülkenberg got going up through sort of uphill climb in the F1 race as well, just sort of wiped out by an incident that wasn't really your doing.
But very unfortunate, and again, annoying that after such a good display on the Saturday during the sprint race, Solov kind of reverts back to what we're kind of expecting from him in a way, and that he went for what was a very overly ambitious move. And it's a rare time that I will agree with the stewards there, because they got a penalty quite right for him. I think 10 seconds was potentially quite lucky for him in some regards, that it was only that little, considering that I know they're all learning, but at the same time, some moves should just be obvious not to do. But that's racing, is what happens, I suppose, at the end of the day. But out in front, we had three familiar names again. And it's interesting, Branning at P3, I feel like we hadn't seen much of him since the start of the season in some ways. And I know that we get big gaps between rounds in Formula 3, but it was just nice to see him back up there, because you hear a lot about him. You hear that he's going to go and do this, he's going to do that. He's got a lot of positive momentum behind him that's quietly building. And then you're like, but where is he? And then bam, Monaco, podium in Monaco. And you've got Mansell in P2, which is just nice to sort of see, because Christian Mansell, I think what you were saying earlier, Fraser, about all the drivers getting on really well, I think he's kind of quite a big part of that. He seems to get on with everyone. He seems quite a nice, approachable guy, and just he very much appreciates where he is and what he's doing, and he's having a great time with it.
100%, one of the biggest characters in the Formula 3 paddock, right? And everyone seems to love Christian Mansell. But yeah, listen, good weekend for him. Really good weekend. Used his experience. So we haven't seen much of his one-lap pace, actually, have we, in Formula 3? But that was by far his best qualifying session since he's graduated to Formula 3 at the start of last season. And you're right, yeah, Luke Brown in P3 obviously made a mistake in Imola, which I think he would have been hoping to bounce back from this weekend. And I don't think he could ask for much more than that. Again, he'll be looking at consistency, as per will everyone will in Formula 3, but just not quite good enough to beat Gabriele Mini over one lap, who second year in a row is quite clearly the Monaco expert, isn't he?
Very much so, and you segued very nicely into Jesse's winner for the round so far, part one of this season, which I want to go into. And you said he's been an obvious choice, but rightly so in a lot of ways there.
Yeah, I mean, he's earned for me the title as sort of winner from this, because, yeah, as I sort of mentioned all the way through this, it's been a case of consistency, and only one non-points finish is quite good, and it's seeing him sort of come to the top. Cream rises to the top. We always say this with the feeder series, the cream always rises to the top, with the exception of a few drivers where they're sort of floated on a paycheck maybe. But Gabriele Mini is proving that he's there of his own accord, and he's there of his own racing ability, and that is... it's putting him in good stead, I think, and it's looking tasty for him to get an F2 seat next season, I think, at this rate.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's the unfortunate thing of some drivers will leave F2 next year, and we want to see them in F1, but as we already said about earlier, we don't know where the hell they're going to go. So Mini definitely deserves that spot in F2 to see how much of a momentum he can bring in there, because, again, it's F2 is that interesting test of just because you were great in F3 doesn't mean you're going to be good in F2, and I think that definitely separates a lot of drivers out there. But I think Mini, he could be one of them. I mean, you don't become a Monaco expert for nothing, and then you just forget how to be a driver. So that's going to be interesting to see for next year for sure. He definitely deserves it. And again, this, just another friendly character on the grid, which I know we're not meant to be basing on personalities, but it helps us to like them a bit, doesn't it? Is there anyone for you, Fraser, though, that's been standing out in particular so far this season out of the 30 drivers or so that we've had?
Can I be honest? I don't think there's one driver that has stood out. I think there's been a few drivers who have stood out. I think Mini's obviously had a really good start to the season. I think Browning obviously is doing what I think many people expected him to do. For me, Fornaroli is the surprise of the season. I think he's had to use his experience from last season to have a really strong start to the season. I personally didn't have him down as a title contender. I had thought it was going to be between Boganovic, Mini and Browning. So it's good to have Fornaroli up there. And without stealing your answer, Timo, Arvid Lindblad is also one that I think has really stood out because 16 years old, making the step up. I think he's had a really good start to the season, and he could consider it and incredibly consistent. So yeah, I've no clear answer, but this is why we
classic Formula 3.
It is exactly. I'll take a seat on that fence over there. But that's just the nature of Formula 3, isn't it? Because there's so many good drivers. It's very rare you get someone who really takes the championship by the scruff of the neck. So there's a few there that have stood out.
Yeah, only no, four rounds in, it's tricky to pick them apart at this point. And yeah, we're like, you look at 72 is the top, and then you've got drivers all the way down to 11th on 30 points. It's not all that far to sort of assume that those drivers could close the door if there's sort of a busy enough race weekend with enough weird retirements.
Absolutely. I said earlier as well about Lawrence Van Hoopen. Obviously, he's been competing for the podium in every single round this season. He hasn't quite got the points to back up that, you know, that raw pace that he's had. He's had issues in some races and been a bit unfortunate in some races. But qualifying, right, wise, he's been there every single round this year, there or thereabouts, ready for whether it's for a sprint race, reverse, start or starting high up in the reverse grid, or there on genuine pace for the feature race. He's maybe not had the points to compensate for his pace this season.
Yeah, one lap pace is decent enough, 12th, 8th and 11th on the quali, so he's doing all right when it comes to sort of getting onto that feature race grid, and that pays dividends, certainly those sort of 12s and 11s when it comes to sprints, and he's capitalised on those quite nicely with a good batch of podiums.
It's very much that argument of just look at the edge of the picture when you're looking at a historical event to see who's there, and then look about 10 years in the future and see where, how much close to the centre of the photo that they've gotten. And you're like, maybe this is one of the drivers, he's been there. It's like, we'll keep an eye on him to see if he gravitates towards the centre or if he disappears into the background. But just to build on your point that you were saying about Arvid there, Brader, it's the age thing for me that made him my winner for this, because looking at the Red Bull Juniors for a while over the last years, and on their website, he's been there for ages. And I'm like, I've yet to ever like properly see him do anything. Like, I'm sure I can find the random YouTube stream or Facebook page where there's a race going on that he's part of, or I'll find a track maybe that he might be racing at. But it's nice to see him finally here on a bigger stage, and one DNF, one P11, but the rest all in the points of race-wise this season, with two podiums, including a win. Pretty decent start, and you've got to think that he doesn't need to have an amazing season somewhere else. He could be keeping those two podiums and not get any more this season, and that's perfectly fine because he's so young. He can afford to take a little bit more time than some of the others and just really build up that gap. He doesn't need to skip straight into Formula 2. He doesn't need to go straight there next year. He can do another season if he wants to, take 2 years for F2, and maybe by the time he's done all that and he's comfortable, there might actually be a seat available at Formula 1. Who knows? But yeah, I think it's just a nice little left field there. And again, a little bit like I was saying with some of the other drivers, keep an eye on where they are now to see how much they come towards the centre now that they are visible, at least, and you're not just squinting to see who's there in the background.
Yeah, he's an interesting one. Yeah, certainly. And yeah, I was just going to lead into spinners really and sort of say, I think he's sort of quite the counter then to your spinner.
Yeah, because especially Montoya for me, I was looking at this thinking, I had your voice in the back of my head, Fraser. I'm never too harsh with people at this stage of their career, but I'm like, I've got to be. to the end of it. You're nicer than I am on this regard, so I'm going to make you choose someone. Yeah, it's his second season in F3, and he's quite a big name, got a big dad, and I don't know, I just kind of expected a bit more from him already this season, and he hasn't really made the improvement you'd expect him to. And I was looking at the season he had up to this point last year, and already had a couple of podiums, I think, in points finishes, and this year he's just kind of, Montoya's here, and you're like, where I can see his name on the thing, but it's kind of a lot lower down than he'd expect, and you just think, is there something wrong with the car? Is he not getting enough time here or there, or what's going on there? You think if anyone could potentially afford a bit more seat time somewhere else, even as a private test, it might be him. So I'm kind of curious what's going on there. So this is going to be my tough love approach that Jesse and I are famous for on this podcast, and that probably means he's going to win next time out in Spain.
I hope so. I'll be straight on the blower to you, mate, and fucking you for that. So
I'll do what I can. I'm the bad cop for a reason, Brady. You are the good cop, though. I'll give you a second to think of a name, because I'm going to go for Jesse, because this is another name I wasn't potentially expecting to see on the spinners list, but I can see why.
Yeah, I sort of, again, went for the tough love option when I picked Mary Boyer for this, because I've been a little bit underwhelmed by his season so far. He did all right last year, but sort of coming into his second season in F3, if you really want to start sort of getting those doors open for F2, you've got to start making the moves, making a name for yourself early. And he's just not doing that for me this year. He doesn't seem to be juggling it with Euro Cup 3 like he did last year. There's just a bit of a spark missing when you look at the sort of younger drivers that have come in, the other names that we're seeing sort of more regularly on or around the podium. Boyer's just not there as much as I was anticipating him being this year. So not necessarily a spinner, but certainly one I'd like to see try harder. I'll be sort of kind enough and write that.
We're not mad, we're just disappointed.
Yeah, that's sort of the vein I'm going for with Boyer here. But I think that leads sort of nicely sort of effort and sort of aspect-wise towards Fraser's sort of spinner, as it were, or Fraser's one he'd like to see do better.
Yeah. I'm shaking a little bit. No, I think for me, I'm rather than driver, I'm going to go for a team. I think Rodin a bit quite disappointing, really, all things considered. And I know they're not, you know, they for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, but they're such a good team across the board. But in Formula 3, they just never really been able to sort their pace out and to become a front runner in Formula 3. So, I think they've obviously points this weekend, but up until this weekend in Monaco, they were the only team not to score any points in Formula 3. And for a team who have standards as high as Rodin, I think they would have wanted more than that. So, Rodin probably the standout spinners for me.
You know what? I'll accept it, because you make a good case for that, to be fair. And it is a shame, because I think it's one of these teams where I think once you've been watching Formula 2 and Formula 3 for a few years, you obviously get more familiar with everyone. And when you've got such a high turnover, you look at the teams then as a way to identify who do I back, and maybe if I've got more personal skin in the game, if I'm going to choose someone. And yeah, you're kind of used to not necessarily brilliance from them, but you expect better. And I think it's a shame that they're not quite there. In the same way that what you were saying about Prema in Formula 2 earlier, it's like, what are you doing down there? Get up. You know what you're doing. You're not one of these new teams coming. You shouldn't, as much as we love AIX coming in and doing what they've been doing, that's not what we're expecting from them. And that's the kind of thing you should be up to. So why are you not going to do that?
Exactly that. And Rodin win in everything. I mean, they're winners in Formula 2. They're winners in GB3. They win regularly in British F4. So I don't know what it is about the Formula 3, you know, setup that just doesn't seem to click for whatever reason. But in relation to their high expectations and how good a team they are, I'd say that they've probably been the biggest spinners this season.
Mm. Like, you look at their F2 results, 2018 win with Seta Cambra and Norris, 2019 fourth place, a bit of a bum one. Then you go 2020, 2021, they've got third place. They pace second in 22 with Lawson and Sargent, third place again with Maloney and Fittipaldi in 23 in F2. Could you swap your sort of team structures between F3 and F2 and just see what's going on there? Because they haven't got a bad driver lineup in F3. I don't know what's gone wrong. And it seems to be sort of historic almost. You look at going back 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, their sort of results in F3 have all been a bit pants. And I mean, they never had some truly terrible drivers. Zach O'Sullivan for them in 2022. Johnny Edgar, 21, was pretty decent in 2020. Clément Novalak was the big points hauler for them. And that feels like a bit of a weird sentence to say. And even then, they're sort of scraping around the bottom of the barrel, 8th, 10th, 7th, 10th across the points. You're thinking, where's this mix of balance in sort of structure coming from? Why can't they get the good guys to sort of run their F3 outfit?
Or is it, you know what you got to do?
What's that?
Get in there, fix it.
I don't know if I have the skills and the capability to fix that, but it's probably
it's not going to get any worse, arguably.
Well, yeah, listen.
Don't challenge him.
If Rodin want me to drive, then they can give me a buzz. So.
Not going.
Well, I don't even have a segue for that. I'm trying to think if there's a natural segue, but I'm going to keep it with you, Fraser, because well, I mean, if he gets in, he'll be, from that.
If Fraser gets in, he will be a driver worth a mention.
That is true. That is very true. So, is there anyone else on the list, Fraser, that you think is worth either a good shout out or a bad shout out for?
No, I think we've summarised. I mean, I've obviously mentioned Lawrence Van Hoopen a couple of times on the podcast. I think he, as I said, he's one that probably doesn't have the point to show how good he's been this season. I guess the other one as well is Martinus Stenshorn. I think Stenshorn, given he, you know, him and Tramnitz pushing Antonelli so close for the title in Frecca last season, it wasn't really that close, to be fair. But they were the two challengers in Frecca last season. With Tim Tramnitz up there in seventh place in the standings, maybe Stenshorn would be looking for a little bit more this season. But I think.
But again, Stenshorn, I'm glad you mentioned, because it's an interesting one, because you think McLaren's not just going to add a driver to their rostrum for the hell of it, and you then look at the results and go, why have you?
Yeah.
What are you seeing that we're not? There must be something coming.
One win, everything else out of the point. It's such a strange points haul for Stenshorn, is that sole sprint race win in Albert Park, and then the rest of it is just...
As you say, Timo, McLaren don't pick driver. They don't pick any driver. They're not like Red Bull, where they take a gamble on 16 drivers, for example, across three categories. They're very selective with who they go with, and they usually pick very good drivers as well. So they must see something in Marcinia Stenshorn. As I said, great Frecca campaign last season, pushed Antonelli for the title. Tim beat Tim Tramnitz, who's up there in seventh place. So maybe just an unfortunate start to the season for him. High Tech maybe struggling a little bit. Obviously Luke Browning not running away with the title, should we say. So maybe he's one to watch for the second half of the season.
Red Bull definitely a team that would have done well in the Colosseum back in ancient Rome. Jesse, who have you got as someone who's worth a mention?
Only Goethe is having a more consistent season than my winner. He's sort of been consistently in the points, I think. Yeah, in the points every weekend, which is every event he's been in the points and scoring points. But just not at the same level that we've seen with Mini. You look at Goethe, 9th, 10th, 5th, 9th, 1st, 2nd, 10th, 10th. Like, yeah, you're in the points, but you're only bringing home sort of one or two at best. And then a few sort of strays into sort of towards the double points, double figures points. It's good consistency. I just need him to start making that step up. A slightly better run of qualies would give him that better sort of head start working towards the points in the big feature races. But yeah, for the moment, we're seeing a good performance from Goethe, and I think one to keep an eye on. I don't know whether we're going to sort of see him make the move up to F2 this year, but if we get him again in F3 next year, he could be one to make a championship run.
And potentially one of those drivers where they get tested out at Abu Dhabi, perhaps to see if they're near that level, but they're not quite sure, then that's the perfect place to try them out and see. Like, actually, no, go back to F3 for a bit. Yeah. But we'll think about you next year, but thanks for coming.
They'll put him on the tipping point to see if he's just about ready to make the cusp. I don't think he will be, unless he has a good turnaround through the second half of the season. I'm optimistic.
Yeah. We're still very early days. but your better run of qualities is exactly the point I wanted to make about my driver, which will surprise you very least of all, Jesse, if that I've gone for Flush here, because she's just an interesting case study, and she gets more interesting every year on the driver front for me, because she's been in Formula 3 for a while now in the grand scheme of things, and her results don't always tell the full story. And I think this qualifying is where it's really letting her down, because we've seen how much he's been able to improve race-wise over a number of the rounds. She's had some bad luck at points. You look at the puncture, I think she got in Australia, then there was the BNF this weekend in Monaco, and obviously Monaco just being Monaco, so it's going to be tricky at the best of times to improve on qualifying, but she's been very close, and up until this weekend, she was the highest placed driver with 0 points, and just kind of shows that she just needs that one or two results to really get her up there, because that the bottom five drivers, I think, in the point standings on who've got actual points, they don't have that many. If she can get a really decent result, she can rock it up there. And I think it's interesting that qualifying is the weak point there, because a lot of the time we go, oh, qualifying doesn't really matter, it's where you finish. But then Formula 3, because of how big the field is, you think, no, actually, qualifying here does help a lot. And even if you look at that, particularly with the reverse grid with the top 12, sort of like, if you just improve a little bit, you get close to that, you could end up somehow, Solov, for Christ's sake, ended up on reverse pole. If he can do it, why can some of those other drivers not be able to get there as well, not just first, but others as well? So I'm going to be interested to see how she gets on over the rest of the season. Austria, she did well at last year. I still maintain she got points there. I don't care what anyone says. And she got points in a couple of the rounds as well, I think. So I want to see her improve, because she's very much this driver who, she had an interview recently where someone asked about F1 Academy, why you not go there. It's like, well, why should I have to? Because I'm trying to make it with the best of them. I want to be measured on this instead of having to go back to the start again every 5 minutes when someone thinks, oh, I know what's a great idea, which is great for the younger girls coming up. But for someone who tried to do it the hard way, you want to see them succeed and you love an underdog that way. So I'm hoping I'm not putting eggs in the wrong basket here, and I just really want to will her forward.
Yeah.
I mean, if she wins F1 Academy, then where do they set her? They send her to F3, right? So it's where she is. I think for her, she's in the right place, and it's about focusing on, you know, pushing on in Formula 3, maybe improving that qualifying slightly if we're being really critical, and pushing on and seeing whether she can bag herself a Formula 2 seat at some point in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to sort of look at her against her teammates, and you look at Noel Lael up in 14th, 15 points on the board.
Mm.
He's got those in sprint races where that little improvement in qualifying has got him into those sort of reversed upper echelons and gotten him those additional points. And yeah, I mean, she's close with Tommy Smith at the moment, obviously on count back when you look at the spread of points, but that additional sort of few retirements really haven't done her any favours. They're both tied on 0 points. But like you said, it's close at the bottom, as it always seems to be with F3. You've got sort of one driver on 5 points and then three tied on six. Then you get to 8 points is Joseph Loke. It won't take much across a couple of weekends to sort of chase down that pack. And at that point, you're getting into the sort of the top 20, which is where you really start sort of separating out sort of wheat and chaff, certainly.
And I think as well, just to bring it full circle to Formula 2, is that we saw with drivers last year, and we see it in previous years as well, and Kushmini, I'm still apologising to him for this, but it's a perfect example of, just because you might not be hitting the nail on the head in F3 doesn't mean you won't nail it in F2. And he was the best surprise we got out of F2 last year, it felt like, because no one was expecting it. We were like, even Fraser in his politeness was going, I'm not so sure about this. And then we were all just absolutely happy as Larry with this happening. And now he's in one of the best looking cars on the grid. So I just wonder if someone's willing to give her a chance. And AIX seems like the kind of team that would be willing to try something out, because they just seem a bit, they're fresh. They want to make a name for themselves. If you look at it from a really cynical point of view, having a woman in the car is great marketing. What's the harm in trying her out in Abu Dhabi or something like this, just to see what happens? And who knows, he might end up with another Maya story. And for motorsport in general, that normally be good for everyone. And also just helps stick it to the Minicali for various comments he's made over the years, which I'm just happy about on a separate note.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, when Tatiana Calderon was in Formula 2 a couple of years ago, returned to Formula 2, it was a great good news story for motorsport in general, right? So absolutely.
And the thing, unfortunate thing with her was that she then was like, oh, she's in F2, why is she not doing well? Like, because that's not necessarily how it is. You look at the team she's put in, it's like, well, how much do you question that? Oh, it's not good enough to just be in F2 now. She's got to win and all this kind of thing. It'd just be nice if she got a seat at a, not necessarily Prema, or then again Prema this year, maybe Prema, and somewhere midfield perhaps, so that you can say it's not the car that's letting it down, it's not the circumstances. If there's anything letting it down, it's her. And then at least you can base it fairly off the criteria she has said herself that she wants to be based on. So that's all we want at the end of the day, is give them a fair shot. And if not, fair enough. But until then, shush. But do we have any other points we want to make about the first part of this Formula 3 season so far, other than how long can this streak of different winners go on for? I'd like it to be all season, please.
Well, I mean, there's plenty more drivers to pick from. It could do.
I think for me, Timo, you know, it just shows what a great series Formula 3 is, what a competitive series Formula 3 is. As you say, 8 different winners in 8 rounds. There's still a lot of really, really good drivers who haven't won a race yet. And, you know, I'm sure we'll continue to see 11, 12, 13 different winners in the category before the end of the season. But for me, yeah, really excited second half of the, or, you know, moving into the middle of the season, if you like, to see how the season continues. I'm excited to see the rookies really starting to push on, and you know, Arvid Lindblad, for example, you know, he's the highest placed rookie, I believe. Yes, he is highest placed rookie. If he starts winning races in the second half of the season, and you know, putting Mini and Boganovic to shame in the same car as him, then I think, you know, that'd be a really big statement. So yeah, no, looking forward to seeing how the rookies get on in the second half of the season.
Final question, then, Jesse, I'll come to you first of all for this. If the consequences that we talked about earlier for Solov and Co. does mean that they obviously can't compete, but they are allowed to be replaced for a round. Are there any up-and-coming drivers that you'd like to see in that seat? I can see Fraser going, damn, there's too many names to choose from already. So that's why I've gone for Jesse first here. Put you on the spot. Who would you want to see for a one-off appearance to see if they can do it at Silverstone or Spa?
I think for me, the only other sort of feeder series I'm really thinking of to this extent is sort of F1 Academy. I think there's some interesting drivers in there that would be interesting to sort of give them the chance to make the step up to. I still maintain it'd be quite interesting to see what Jamie Chadwick would do, to see if she'd sort of stuck at the sort of FIA sort of F3, F2, F1 ladder, see what would happen next for her, because she was dominant in W Series. It'd be great to see whether that was going to be transferable. And obviously she's been honing the skills in Indy Next. But I think stick in an Abby Pulling, stick in a Dorian Pat. I want to see what they do. Much as we sort of seeing the, it feels bad to use the phrase experiment, but certainly that's what it seems to be at times with Sophia Flörsch. I think move up an F1 Academy driver into those seats those weekends.
It's nice to see another driver that isn't her doing it, because it just seems to be all the weight is on her shoulders. Like, there are other available. We don't have to be basing it just on her the whole time. It's just this is not the experiment where it's one person decides everything for you. Like, yeah. No, more.
And equally, they're not circuits that clash with the F1 Academy calendar, so there's not going to be major problems there. It would be really nice to see them sort of get the shot at it, move up. I know that Pam might have a bit of a clash with sort of Frecca and having done Spa already, but yeah, it's a
circuit. Ask permission.
Ask for permission, or maybe sort of Panda Spa and Pulling does, or Panda Silverstone puts Pulling does Spa, something along those lines, because it would just be really interesting to see what they're able to do. And equally, I think it would put to bed a lot of the possible criticisms against Flörsch as well, if all of a sudden we see drivers that we herald as the next big thing make that step up, and we sort of go, oh, actually, clearly it's harder than we thought. You can't just throw them in and assume they're going to be a big fish in a very big pond all of a sudden.
As for me, I think I'd want to see Marta Garcia in there, just because I'm still annoyed that she didn't go from F1 Academy into Formula 3, as it seemed the obvious thing to do, instead of going slightly sideways. But that would be great. She just had the FE test, so again, she's getting lots more seat time. It's nice to see, and she's beating Frecca, so I just want to see what she could do there in a circuit that she's been at before, but it's been a little while, but she's at least familiar with what it is. Fraser, have you got a name?
Who has the most money?
What's to stop me doing it then, if that's your answer?
Money.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. No, listen, all of those names are all worthy mentions. I'd love to see one of those drivers step into Formula 3, and I think it'd be absolutely brilliant for the sport to see one of those drivers in Formula 3. If I'm thinking logically, particularly for that high-tech seat, the GB3 calendar doesn't clash with Silverstone on that weekend. So would we see Will McIntyre, for example, making a step up from high-tech in GB3 to go and race for Hi-Tech in Formula 3 around Silverstone, a track that he's already raced at this season. I don't know whether that would count. I'm assuming it wouldn't because he hasn't been regularly racing in Formula 3. So I'm assuming he would be able to step up into Formula 3 because he's not a regular driver. So, you know, yeah, would Will McIntyre be a good shout for Hi-Tech? And yeah, I guess you go, Yuchugwu, it would be another one.
I'm interested thinking of him.
To see. Yeah, exactly. To see whether he would be a good fit for
he's my new Arvid Lindblad, I think. Well, I keep hearing the name and seeing him around the edges, but I've yet to properly see him do something outside of the old YouTube clip. I'm like, come on, let me see you properly.
No, exactly. A McLaren driver who's obviously been in and around the feeder series for a long time and done very, very well in everything he's raced so far. He's second in the championship at the moment in GP3. So, yeah, would he be someone that that Hi-Tech could draft in? He's been driving for Rodin this season in GP3, so I'm not sure whether there'd be a deal there between Hi-Tech and Rodin. Probably not. Let's wait and see how he obviously he's a Prema driver as well. So in Freca. So let's wait and see how he gets on who's available that weekend. But as I say, unfortunately, I think it'll come down to who pays the most money.
Yeah, I'd like to see
I'm a cynical bombshell. If we will wrap for this episode though, but that is all we've got time. We're going to do part two. I'm not entirely sure when we decided, possibly after the European season, just before the finale, after the summer break, we'll see, because otherwise we're going to have so much to go through. In the meantime, though, we'll be back, or simply already back, with a review of the F1 Monaco Grand Prix, and there'll be a Canadian Grand Prix preview out of not too distant. Feeder series-wise, we'll have this, but for Formula 2 out also in the next few weeks or so, once we actually get around to recording that. So lots of content coming for you in the near future, so do make sure you've liked, subscribed, and all that good stuff to make sure that you don't miss any of it. In the meantime, though, Fraser, thank you for being here. Where can the people find you if they want more of your soothing tones?
People can find me at _FraserFord1 on social media, or you can head over to Inside F2. Our YouTube channel's recently hit 100,000 subscribers, so you can find us there reviewing every round of the Formula 2 season. So, yep.
I'm doing a very nice job at it too. Jesse, where can the people find you?
As usual, you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly, all the usual Classic Car news, reviews, and important gossip shoved in there, plus obviously road tests as well. Coming up, we've got my road test of a very nice 1961 MGA. That's about an issue and a half away, for depending on when this comes out. But worth picking up and reading. Otherwise, social media at Jesse on Cars across pretty much all platforms. So give us a follow. There'll be all sorts of interesting bits scattered across there too. Timo, if people want more of you, you're all corners of the wind, really, aren't you?
I am. I've just got to kind of choose a couple this time instead of trying to do all of them. We'll be here for another hour, but I'm going to go for On the Curbs for at the moment for everything generally on Instagram and YouTube. And I've also got an interview out over on Is It Fast with Formula Regional Japan's Anna Inatsume, who's following in the footsteps of W Series' Miki Kayama, who went on to absolutely blitz that championship when she was there. So she's hoping to emulate that. And it's, I always like the Japanese with their drivers. They're always good fun. You've just got to, you're always rooting for them. I don't know why, but it's so likable as drivers and individuals. So it's so fun to do go and check that out. Anyway, that's enough of that. My feeder series for you for now. Thank you all very much for listening, and we'll be back soon.